irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show. I'm Bruce Cameron. Justin is out this week, but he'll be back soon on mission and taking care of some things this week. So once again, we have some more information on the First Step Act and federal prison reform. And again, we have with us this week, Mr. Jose Santana. Good afternoon, Jose.
Good afternoon, Bruce. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome. Well, this is something that we've been following closely. We've been providing coaching and consulting to attorneys and family members of those affected by federal prison sentences. The politically correct term is justice-involved clients. Just so you know that, Jose, they're justice-involved. I was given some education on that last week. You can't call people sex offenders anymore. They're justice-involved clients that are minor attracted. So the lingo, man, the lingo in this thing is changing, right?
It is changing. It's changing.
Trying to normalize everybody. Okay.
It's changing everywhere because in Mexico they call them personas privadas de la libertad, PPL, an inmate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So there you go. So it's even going that way. Well, anyway, so as we all know, President Trump signed into action the First Step Act. And then, of course, we had the COVID-19 pandemic come in, which had overlays from the Attorney General and other guidance measures. So then the Bureau of Prisons, here in short shrift, has been tasked with jumping through multiple sets of hoops provided by the First Step Act and then provided by the Attorney General and other executive decisions and decision makers. So that said, though, the BOP's come out with some new updates, Jose. But before we go over those updates and some of the other court decisions like we did last time, what are your thoughts on FSA?
Well, yeah, the Bureau, it's trying to juggle a couple of things at the same time. The First Step Act had some statutory requirements. Officially, you know, when that act was signed into law, and it impacted the Bureau of Prisons immediately. They had to recalculate sentence according to the good conduct time, a new law of 54 days. And then they had to look at other things, the safety valves, the stacking issues and the reductions in sentences and compassionate releases granted. And then came the CARES Act to implement that also. So it's a lot of juggling things. I'm glad to see that the Bureau clarified a couple of things that they just put out on the website regarding the First Step Act, the recidivism updated to the pattern risk assessment tool, the updates to it, talking about general recidivism and recidivism for violence, and also listed the violent offenses. So I think that's important. The Bureau is coming up with that kind of explanation so folks could understand it better. Yeah, I mean, it takes, they even say it, consult your attorneys. And that's why we're in this business, trying to assist family members and their loved ones that are impacted by justice involved individuals.
Justice involved, indeed. I'd love to kind of go through when you're ready. Yeah, I agree. These new updates, many of our clients, and a client we met even with last week that, know, violence or the threat of violence can linger in many offenses, in drug offenses, even with some of these seemingly white collar offenses involving medical type situations.
I mean,
yeah, where harm can be, you know, if there was any kind of notice of harm to any individual as a result of the criminal conduct, while the person might not be charged with a violent act, if there's any harm associated with that. But you know what? We're not going to dig that deep right now. Let's go into the violent offense codes for the pattern risk assessment. Let's do that. You want to pull that up?
Have it.
You got it. Okay. So, but you know, now folks, we're going to talk about some crimes of violence. Some of these are going to be painfully obvious to you as listeners or viewers. However, you'll be surprised how many people want to say that maybe child sex trafficking isn't a violent crime. She wanted to go with me. Or I mean, just some crazy stuff. So anyway, but we're going to go ahead and take the time to explain some of these and talk about some of these. And this is good information if you're an attorney or a loved one or somebody facing federal prison or whatever, just to try to, you know, get your head around some of these violent offense codes. Now, if you have a violent offense code, that's going to elevate your pattern risk score. Your pattern risk score is a risk instrument that's utilized by the Federal Bureau of Prisons in-house that has static and dynamic risk factors, and that they're going to make a lot of decisions on programming, halfway house, home confinement, shoot, even your housing unit. You know, if you move from a pattern score of high to a pattern score of low, then possibly you're eligible for transfer into a low security institution that matches with your risk, which is kind of a good modification here, the risk needs and responsibility model for those of you that are criminal justice mavens and aficionados and otherwise. And talk about a couple of popular ones that we encounter.
Well, I mean, like just a caveat, Bruce, I just want to mention these are statutory. These are enlisted in the law, and there is no discretion. These are categories that the law establishes that they will always be violent offenses for the purpose of First Step Act. These are disqualifiers among the fact that they're incorporated into the pattern risk score and it ultimately gives a rating. These are disqualifiers for the First Step Act, earned time credits and things like that. So if anybody is sentenced under any of these statutes, that's why we say it's not that you're not eligible, it's that the law disqualifies you for certain things. You can get other things, but you won't get earned time credits. You will always get the good conduct time by law given, but earned time, First Step Act, ETC, earned time credits will not be granted.
Correct.
And that's why when we get an attorney and a client calls us and we want to look at the pre-sentence report, because the pre-sentence report depicts and describes the conduct, the overall offense conduct. It doesn't have to be an element of the crime. It's just that if it happened, like for instance, like the case we had last week, Bruce, it was a conspiracy and there was co-defendants in it. And somebody died, but the individual was never indicted or never charged with. But that's what happened because of the fraud that they committed as to adulterating products, food and vitamin supplements that individuals took, which had kidney failure and ultimately resulted in the death of somebody.
Okay.
So those type of things are the underlying offense behavior, which the Bureau will use for classifying an inmate, especially at initial.
I can't tell you how many times we've had conversations with attorneys and family members to say, hey, there's two types of sex offenders. There's the touchers and the clickers. And so you know, say, oh, my loved one or my client is just a clicker. He never touched anybody, this and that. They'll say, he's a nonviolent sex offender. How many times have we heard that? He's a nonviolent sex offender. Okay. Right. Okay. But let's look at the offenses. And I'm going to say them out loud for those of you who are wanting to write. So we have 8 U.S.C. 1328, 18 U.S.C. 1591, 18 U.S.C. 2241, very popular. Actually, it's 2241 through 2248. We have 18 U.S.C. 2251 and 2252, very popular. What else we have? 18 U.S.C. 2421 to 2429, 4320, and 10 U.S.C. 920. And again, if you have any questions, contact Jose or myself, and we can explain those statutes to you. But make no mistake about it. So, Jose, so if these statutes are listed, that means they are precluded from First Step Act goodies.
First Step Act ETC, earned time credits.
Earned time credit. Okay.
Well, now, benefit thereof, they won't get that credit. They could probably get a little bit more extra commissary or extra phone or extra whatever the institution is given to those who their First Step Act earned time credits do not apply, but it's not that they will receive the benefits that the First Step Act gives them. And again, I make it clear, because then some people would confuse what we're saying. It's a determination that's going to be made by the institution, and they don't have any discretion based on the statute. The fact is that the statute gives anybody who was sentenced under these codes, they get good conduct time. 54 days, they will get that. But the extra credits, First Step Act, earned time credits for the programming, which is not a sentence reduction, they do not qualify for that based on the statute, excluding those inmates.
Okay.
Any question? I see
the next one.
In deep thought.
Yeah, I was thinking of the deep thought. Now, robbery, theft, or bank robbery. 18 U.S.C. 2113. 18 and 2213. My loved one walked into a bank with a squirt gun, and he's mentally ill. He's a not violent bank robber. No. My mentally ill was this other person wrote a note saying to the teller, please give me $100. That's not bank robbery. Wrong. That's bank robbery. And I'm explaining why. And then you'll jump on this. Lastly, Jose was at Carswell. I opened FMC Carswell, a women's institution, high security, supermax, everybody. Jose, I had a lady, okay? I had a lady, and we saw her on pretrial supervision, and actually she had thrown a brick. She was mad, and she would throw a brick through the bank, throw a brick through the glass and say threatening and disparaging things. She goes in. She gets out. She takes her sentence to the door because she's violent. What she'd do 2 days later, I see her in R&D. Threw a brick. Threw a brick. And here she goes again, man, in this circle. You know, it's sad how, bank robbery, has usually in two flavors, the mentally ill or, the really, truly violent Bonnie or Clyde or whatever types. Anyway, the other point I want to make is that robbery is robbery. There's an implied threat there. Okay, so when you're charged, you're implying a threat, even if you're handing a nice note to the teller. That's a threat, and by virtue of its act, is a threat. And now, I would still participate in RDAP if you can qualify for RDAP, if you can qualify for some of the First Step Act programs and get, like you said, get these other benefits with commissary, phone calls, whatever. You can get into programs and you can take programs. It's just that you can't receive the time off or the time credit for the programs. So the government is not discriminating against you or whomever, not you. The government's not precluding people from program participation. They're just, you're precluded from program, certain program benefits due to the violent nature of the statute. Jose, please.
Yeah, and those benefits are not rights. Those are privileges granted
to
individuals under the law. And so you were convicted under any of these titles, so then you're disqualified for that type of benefit. And perfect example. I had a guy who was the car driver of a bank robbery, and he was behind the bank waiting for the guys to come. They turn the corner, they get in the car, the guy drives off. They catch him later down the road, counting the money in their apartment, and they get all busted. They get all convicted for robbery. So guess what? The car driver is indicted and convicted of robbery, which in turn, he didn't do anything else. He didn't threaten nobody. He just drove the car. But the title of code is...
Right. That absolutely is. And so, you know, you if you're part of the crime, you get, you know, you participated in the crime. So, again, it's very unfortunate to see, you know, we don't want to discourage people from programming, but I love that this chart is out. You can contact us at federalprisonauthority.com or give us a call at 214-431-2032. We can tell you about this. Let's go through another very, very popular, code. Now, this one, me and you got to talk about firearms, 18 U.S.C. 922 to 924. I thought some of those 922s were at camps and whatnot.
No, I mean, the statute considers it, but those are, if you fall under that category, a lot of the individuals are because of prior convictions or current convictions of drug offenses with firearms, involving firearms, or just pure firearms possessions, or firearms during the commission of a drug trafficking crime and things like that. Those are always will be those categories, 922 through 924, any of them, 924C, 924C1, 924AB, you know, a lot of those statutes with their subsections, they will always be crimes of violence. It doesn't matter if the gun was under the bed. Doesn't matter if the gun was in the car he had. He didn't brandish it. He didn't shoot. He didn't use it, or she didn't use it. As a mere possession of it will link you to those, and those will be always crimes of violence. We have a lot of those cases come up.
Right. So, the 922G. And then what's the 924? What's the one that's felon in possession of firearm during a drug trafficking crime that we get a lot of?
The 924C?
C1?
C1.
Yeah. Okay. So do you know what the 18 U.S.C. 5851 through 5872, was that felon in possession of firearm, or is that something else?
No, that's something else.
I've never seen those. Have you?
Those are very rare.
It's like a bazooka or something. I don't know.
I don't know if it pertains to firearms trafficking. I want to say it's firearms trafficking, sophisticated firearms.
Okay. Okay. Talk a little bit about child sex trafficking. That's 18 U.S.C. 1591. Okay. So hands down, one and done on that. Anybody with that is just going to be precluded from everything. Anything on child sex trafficking?
No, those child sex trafficking will always be and they will be excluded.
Okay. Drugs, death, or serious bodily injury. Remember, this is not 18, but 21 U.S.C. 841. 18, right, is another conspiracy. But this is 21 U.S.C. 841.
That's always, and one of the biggest one that we deal with, Bruce, 841. 841A, 841B, 841C, C1, 8, all those are always, will always be offenses that will be categorized, right. You know, for the path of risk as violent.
Yeah. And again, now those are 18 841s, right? Or are you talking about 21? 21. Okay, 20, yeah. 21, yeah, all the 21, 841.
We talk about 21, it's 21 United States Code.
It's code, right, right.
USC, 21 USC 841, section
84. Because a lot of people have these drug conspiracies that are 846s, but I think those are Title 18, right? Anyway, call us if you have any questions. But yeah, this one is just drugs, death, and serious bodily injury. It speaks for itself, but people were going to argue the point. Well, was it my dope? Or like Jose said, I was driving the 18-wheeler, or I was a mule, trelot that then, you know, the drugs found their way into children, or somebody died, or what have you. Those are tough situations. But if you're on that code, you're precluded from those first step benefits. All right, Jose, you got one you want to talk about?
Let's see. Well, the racketeering, the 18 U.S.C. 1925, those are RICO Act, the racketeering.
Nice. Those
will be RICO Act, racketeering influence, corrupt organizations. Those are act of violence. They will be categorized as such. So you already mentioned the robbery and theft and robbery, and also the sex offenses. One that is coming up that we've dealt with recently is terrorism. 18 U.S.C. 229. 1992, 23, 20, 31 through 2339 and 8124P. Those are the terrorists with weapons of mass destruction and those type of offenses. Those also, even if the individual was a financier, he was the broker, or he was the one that providing the money, or even the intellectual brain of the operation, those will be acts of violence, even though if they didn't kill anybody. We had a guy who we dealt with, and you know who I'm referring to, Bruce. And at the beginning, he wanted to be voluntary. He waived deportation hearings and everything else like that. And the attorney was a very good attorney, had a very good group of attorneys that we work with, and we provided certain advice and guidance to them. And the individual is already back home in his foreign country, you know, by compassionate release granted a reduction in sentence. So we've worked with those in a few instances.
Exactly. We have. And okay. Yeah. These are just violent or risk codes. I wish they would come out with something with aliens.
Right.
Like illegal reentry. How many different alien codes?
The situation with the aliens, Bruce, and when I was the chief of the DSCC, I was in many policy groups because we work with reentry division, and we work with correctional programs division, and we work with the State Department, with ICE. We had some work groups with ICE. The issue with that is that until there is a determination made by ICE that the individual will be deported or not, the Bureau is hands off. So once the individual is determined not deportable or not going to be excluded from the country, then they could be beneficial, that they could benefit from any of this First Step, that credit, or any other program for that matter, if they're not going to be deported.
That's right. That's right. Okay. And what else we got here? One of my favorites from the past, I saw a lot when I was working at FCI Butner. We do these pretrial studies was for 18 USC 81 for arson. Had several arson guys back in the day. Haven't seen that recently. Did you see any of that your last years at the DSCC? Or?
Yes. Yes, I did.
You did? Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Actually, I saw a lot of that as to insurance fraud.
Yeah.
Some families were wanting to, you know, set their houses on fire. They say nobody was in there, but the potential, only the potential of the house burning or the next house is burning and roll like wildfire spreading. It's just the act of arson and the intent. Right. And I saw a lot of that in certain individuals that had, you know, high dollar guys setting on fire their yachts and setting on fire their planes and things like that. So,
right.
So quite a bit of that because, I mean, we had all the whole country, Bruce.
You know, yeah.
We had the country to designate. And so we saw it from everywhere, from every angle, man.
Well, speaking of that, that's a good segue into aircraft and motor vehicle offenses, 18 USC 31 through 34, 36 mm-hmm. and 37. And my question to you, is that like carjacking or is that destruction to the property?
Yeah, it's related to that. It's like carjacking. It's like hijacking. It's all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And one of the favorite federal statutes that separated federal from state would be many instances kidnapping. Let's not forget about kidnapping at 18 USC 1201 to 1204. So particularly those people taking children and minors across state lines. Mm-hmm. Any good kidnapping thoughts? Or not good thoughts, but thoughts about kidnapping?
Oh yeah. We had them. We had quite a few of them. Actually, we had a guy. Are you there, Bruce?
I am. I had to.
So we had a guy recently here who was at one of our institutions. He's out already. Who had kidnapping? One of the underlying offenses was kidnapping. He had a pattern risk of low. He never went to a camp because the underlying offense was kidnapping. You know, so we've had a share of that. Actually, that's very common. Very common.
That you'd see. Another one I want to talk about that I'm familiar with a little bit is child abuse. There's actually a federal statute for child abuse, Title 18, 2258. I saw that. A lot of my work the last 13 years dealt with the Navajo Nation and a lot of Native American, mm-hmm. any Native Americans that were, particularly in New Mexico, some of that Farmington, Durango, even that kind of crept in, believe it or not, Durango, Colorado, Trinidad, Colorado, some of those reservations kind of crept into the South Central region. Long story short, we do stuff from the tribal courts, and then they would refer these guys or have that child abuse statute on them. That was for Native Americans. I don't know if you saw any other citizens that had that, Jose, or not, but that's what my familiarity was.
Yeah, you're right on target, Bruce. Unfortunately, the majority of the Native Americans, man, were violent against child, against women, a lot of alcohol and drugs involved, and they were always violent. I mean, always violent, sexual assault, sexual abuse, abuse of a minor, child exploitation, you know, domestic disputes. I mean, it was very, very common. And it ranged throughout. I mean, it was from male to female, from female to male, with their children, with their community. It was all over the place. And fortunately, that happens a lot in Indian lands.
Yes, sir. It sure does. So it's one of the things. God, it's one of the things I just every day I go to work and I'd have a stack of green folders. Every one of those was a sex offender or a child abuser. And it was my decision almost in my head to help make a determination on how much RRC these guys would get. And so anyway, yeah, there were some days I'd throw up. I'd literally, people thought, hey, you got bulimia or something? Like, no, man, I just had to rate 27, you know, child abusers and sex offenders. And to think. Daunting responsibility. So,
yeah, it's tough. Whew.
Y'all opened up here talking about this stuff. All right. Something that a little bit easier to talk about is terrorism. 18 U.S.C. 229, 1992, 2331 to 2339, and 8124 PAPA. We're no stranger to terrorism, are we? We've had and going to have clients with this background. What are your thoughts, Jose, on terrorism?
Yeah, I mean, they are out there. I mean, it continues to be out there. And unfortunately, some of the guys that we've dealt with, they thought they were not going to be affected by that because they weren't involved with terrorist act. They weren't involved with killings with people with weapons of mass destructions and things like that. They were just behind the scenes. And actually, in the case that was the Paramount case we had, Bruce, this individual was even by the State Department, he was excluded from the no-flying list of financing. He wasn't granted that statute. I mean, he was really linked incorrectly, but he still had that stigma, and he still was classified under the intelligence world as a supporter, financier of terrorist groups.
Yeah.
And it affected him even going to a medium security facility. He should have been at a low. If he would have been a U.S. citizen, that individual would have been probably at a camp.
Right.
But it did affect the classification. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, it does affect the classification. All right, you pick one here. We've made it through the list. We've made through most of the major food groups here on the list.
I think the major food groups are there, Bruce. This resource page is also contained in the First Step Act of the Bureau of Prisons in BOP.gov.
Yes, I mean, yes.
You can find it there in under the First Step Act section of the website under Risk and Needs Assessment System resources. The fact is that you can look at that, you can see it, but even attorneys that call us and loved ones of individuals that are involved with the justice system are, you know, have a hard time navigating through this and determining, deciphering what's what, you know? So that's what we're in the business to assist and help people understand these things. Because many a times, a lot of, there was recent training this past couple of months in the Bureau of Prisons about this whole First Step Act, the earned time credits and everything else. And a lot of the new case managers don't even know. I spoke to a couple of individuals that don't even know much of it. They're trying to. We stay abreast of this because we read all the time on it. We get challenged by the family and attorneys that consult us. So we stay on top of it. And that's what we try to do with this podcast, try to inform the public and let them know what the situation is so they'd be understanding of it. But if you have any questions, just give us a call. This certainly, this document of the Violence Offense Code for Pattern Risk Assessment, you know, it has the elements of the two recidivism risk scores. Like I said, a specific one for general recidivism risk, and the one for recidivism for violence recidivism risk. So that's the one. That's the two that I've explained to some of our clients that don't understand how this overall. Oh, but he generally he's low. He doesn't have any violence. Well, not necessarily. He might be low, but he does have violence based on the statute he was sentenced under.
Yeah. And Also, folks, I posted these links and these documents up on our First Step Act Federal Prison Reform Facebook community. It's a public group. Answer three questions, I'll let you in. And you'll have access to these documents. Yeah, a lot of people, it's just attorneys, families. A lot of people find it a little difficult to navigate through the BOP.gov website and find these crucial resources. You know, we've told attorneys and paralegals, like, hey, man, you don't have to pay us to do it. It's right there. And they're like, I don't want to navigate. What was that, Jose? It was something. It was a fairly obscure custody or disciplinary code or whatever. And they're like, look, just have you guys tell us what it was, and we were able to go right to it. But you know what? This is what we did with our lives. So this is what we know. And it's a little bit strange for regular civilians to know.
There's a couple of implications here, Bruce, based on this, on how the pattern risk score rating is given. It has some implications as to classifications, and that's the bottom line. They could have a pattern risk of minimum, but based on the severity of the overall offense behavior, because it was violent, they could have a public safety factor of greater severity, which that means that the individual is minimum. He won't go to a camp because of the public safety factor, which will keep him at a higher security level.
So, right.
That's what people don't understand, and they get, you know, technical, and they, well, he wasn't convicted of that. How can the Bureau do that? I'm going to challenge it. Go right ahead and challenge it in the court. The court is going to give discretion to the Bureau because that's the statutory authority of the Bureau, and that's where the separation of power between the executive branch and the judicial branch come in play.
Yeah. Right. And the BOP, as you've indicated, and we talked about this morning, the BOP is withstood the test of numerous cases before the Supreme Court and won on Supreme Court decisions. So there are just certain things that the BOP and the Justice Department can act on and make decisions, very, very life-impacting decisions, room for challenge or scrutiny. You know, even, you know, as Mr. You know, Jose, we had a great conversation with somebody today, this morning, and the guy was saying, well, I'm going to send a motion to the judge, and we're just going to redo the PSR, the pre-sentence investigation. And you're like, no, man, go ahead, finish that off. What they are going to do is, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to send a motion to rewrite the pre-sentence report. In 26 and a half years of my life, I never saw a PSR rewritten. And they tried numerous times to do that, but never saw that rewritten. The fact is that they'll do an addendum if it has to be done, maybe. But those are few and far in between. After the litigation has finished, the gavel has hit, the inmate is convicted, and I've seen not too many of those addendums. But what he wants to do, I don't think that's going to happen. I think that we could help him quicker than he could file a motion, and that motion is determined by the judge. Or even if the inmate goes through administrative remedy, Bruce, I don't think that he'll be successful in finishing that off like that.
Right. So, yeah. So we can, you know, you can get that addendum, but like you said, the cement is dry, and trying to get a jackhammer out and through the cement for an addendum, man, you better be on top of your game, man. That thing, you better be 100,000%, and the U.S. attorney better not object to it.
Right. Right. If there's objections from the U.S. attorney, that's done.
It's a done deal. Yeah, because the judge is going to go to the U.S. attorney. Hey, what do you think about this? You know, that's what I think about it. Not really. But, you know, and then, or sadly, you either get a judge that's way too busy or a judge that's, say, close to 95 years old. It's just, you know, that's not going to be a high priority with a 95-year-old judge. All righty then. Real quick, and just to kind of finish off the food, we got about 9 minutes left. We have war crimes. I want to save threats for a minute. Slavery. Solicitation to commit a crime of violence. Oh, wow. Let's talk about that. You would know about that, right? These guys in the jailhouse.
Yes, sir.
Ordering a hit. Title 18, USC 373, solicitation to commit a crime of violence. Jose, tell us a couple of examples of that.
Well, you know, that's exactly right. You know, the individual police officer, the case of the police officer in was it Illinois? I think it was Illinois, that guy that he had killed his wife first and got insurance paid, and then he ordered a hit again and killed his second wife, and the third one, he killed her, and then was soliciting for the fourth one, somebody to kill her from prison. And so, yeah, that's the type of cases that will fall under, which will always be a crime of violence per the statute. It's not because he wanted to kill the lady. He wanted her to be killed. So murder for hire.
Yeah.
Murder for hire.
Yeah. I saw that a lot in my career, actually. And I even saw that, honestly, in some of the ladies. So, for those of you that either have been married a long time, you can understand that. But
Oh,
Lord. Yeah. Woo! Yeah. Holy smokes. Protection of unborn children, 18 USC 1841. Wow. You got any?
I don't have any example of that.
Oh, man. I had a lady kill her unborn child and put it at my door at Carswell, man. Can you believe that? But that's another day. I know. Just savages. Let's see here. Jury and witness tampering and retaliation, 18 USC 1501 to 1510 and 1513. Share an example of that. Well, you can get that in the pre-sentence report. You can get that way before, you know, Senate. I mean, you can get that.
And that's why,
in addition,
it's important to get us involved from the beginning, because we want to give you some, as attorneys and the families that are going to pretrial on these things, we want to make sure that PSR is really specific and really clarifies certain things that go into the narratives, because that's what the Bureau is going to use to really classify and determine what's happening with the offense conduct, you know. So a lot of the violence, a lot of the threats, a lot of the actions, the individual not necessarily has to commit them, especially when there is multiple co-defendants. He could be classified with the conduct of the overall offense in the conspiracy. He doesn't have to commit an act of violence. And
right.
We emphasize this because people don't get it.
Right. Right. I mean, yeah. I don't want to retread, but like on some of the old opiate cases where you have the pill mill, the doctor, the people at the pill mill, the drug runners from, like, say, Miami area, they run the drugs up to Kentucky. All these people drop dead because of the drugs. And then, you know, one of the lower level people or a physician at a, you know, they're like, why am I getting, you know, and it's like, no, man, everybody, it's like being the driver of the getaway car at the bank robbery. Everybody's going to be held responsible for the conduct. So,
correct.
National defense. There's too many codes to mess with here.
Right. And national security, that involves national security. You know, a lot of these cases I saw with Patriot Act and some of the unfortunately some of the FBI agents that were selling national security secrets to the enemies, you know.
And also, yeah, you're right. And then to a lesser extent, guys that were making like fake bullets and selling them to the military, they were selling flap jackets that were defaultive.
Yes.
Defaultive. faulty. Here we go. Faulty. Can't even speak. Faulty. Bulletproof jackets that weren't bulletproof, and I think they fell under that some of those statutes as well. And they were complaining, "I'm a white collar guy. Why is this a crime of violence?" Like, yeah, because people in our United States military could be killed because of what you did. You know what I mean? So.
One also that's recent in the news is that mutiny and riot, 18 U.S.C. 1792. Mm-hmm. Mutiny and riot. A lot of the things that were happening in Oregon, out there, a lot of those places.
Politicians get with that. And you may see some of these rioters get hit with that. The defamation of these statues. Where is that going to fall?
If it's under mutiny and riot,
put a pipe bomb on it. Where would that fall? You think?
Well, that could be explosive. 18 USC 830.
Yeah, explosive. Yeah. But just the whole thing about defacing federal property, and that's probably a separate code.
Yeah, that
it may or may not be violent. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If my memory serves me right. All right, my man, we got 3 minutes left. Protection of certain identities. Wow, 50 USC 3121. What do you think that is? Protection?
Well, that could fall under, some kind of identity theft. Some kind of that. Maybe extend to businesses and things like that, under that. So mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I haven't seen many of those moves, to be honest with you.
Well, I haven't seen that either. I was fascinated. I know that you have that more global view of these, and I had more of a southernly, Fifth Circuitly view. Okay, cool. And then assault, just straight up assault. 18 USC 111 through 119. Kind of speaks for itself, doesn't it? But, I think we'll see people argue that their assault was minor and, so explosives, biological and chemical weapons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dealt with that.
Search and seizures. So, okay. That's interesting. I wonder if that's an unauthorized or if that's an abuse of power under color law or something else. Well, folks, we didn't get to the other stuff because we just got off on the violent offense codes for the pattern risk assessment today here on the Concierge Coaches Show. Again, if you have any questions about this material, come to federalprisonauthority.com or go to our Facebook community at First Step Act Federal Prison Reform. And a lot of this, all these things are out there for you to click and download yourself. The BOP has a little down thing where you can go to the PDF URL and download the materials to your own computer right there. It's just that easy. And it's just that easy that we made it easier for you to do that. So we're glad to do it and keep everybody informed that's willing to take the time to look at this information. So, Jose, thanks again for coming today.
Well,
it's a pleasure.
Glad that I was
having
able to
you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, these videos will get edited and put up on our First Step Act YouTube channel as well. So you can go to the First Step Act YouTube channel and see these videos and many others. And for your information. And it's good for attorneys and defendants and family members. And the BOP is now accepting new inmates. And so people are going to start going into prison here pretty hard and fast as we speak, as a matter of fact. So, all right, then, everybody. Well, thanks again for looking and listening to the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. We're on all Apple Podcasts. We're on iHeartRadio. We're out there these days. So feel free to listen to our shows for free anytime and be with us next week on an exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show. We'll see you then and be safe, everybody. Take care.
Take care, Bruce.
All right, we'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.